This is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Vazquez. With these podcasts, Father Vazquez provides a very distinct and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient orthodoxy. These broadcasts are available every week free of charge, either as a podcast on Apple iTunes or at epostle.net, Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic World. Whether you're listening on CD, over the internet, or on your MP3 player, we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Vazquez, a priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, a podcast about life and love, about spirituality. What's a podcast about? Just about everything. It's looking at the very fabric of our life through some very ancient lenses. The lenses of Armenian Orthodoxy. Polished up in a new manner. We call that Armenoxy. And we invite you right now to sit back and, well, get them out. Get those lenses out and get ready to look at life with us. The Next Step is part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes mission and is brought to you by epostle.net. Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic Universe. If you're ready, take the next step. Trust me, that is not me running back. No way. I was out in the desert, and there's no way I'd run back from the desert. It is so beautiful. And it was beautiful. I told you last week, went out there for my niece's wedding, and we stayed a little bit above Phoenix, Arizona. So, so beautiful. I don't know what it is. There's something about that desert that just keeps calling me back and telling me that's where we belong. And you know what? I gotta tell you, we did look around. We did look around to see if we could expand the ministry out that way. Had a couple interesting meetings with some great partners throughout the years. One of them is Richard and another one, Gita. Had some great conversation about long-term projects and can we do some projects together? Can the desert really sustain a ministry like we're doing? A lot of interesting stuff. Had a chance to go and see the Armenian Orthodox Church in Phoenix. It's called St. Opgar. Do you know who Opgar is? Probably not. Not too many people know. We've heard of the big ones, but Opgar is one of those lower level guys. Anyway, he happens to be the first, get ready for this, I know Armenians love this first thing. He was the first Christian king. Yes, what? You mean it wasn't St. Durtar? No, it wasn't, actually. Opgar, first century character, and he happens to be the first Christian king, and the Armenian church in the desert, in Phoenix, actually I believe it was in Scottsdale, is named after this king. Yes, St. Opgar. Interesting, huh? You didn't know that there was a St. Opgar, let alone him being an Armenian king. Well, what do you expect? The first Christian king, of course. Let me see if I could remember right. I believe after Opgar, it was Yervant Ardashes, and then it was Durtar the Great, who many people through Armenian history know that he was the one who accepted Christianity. But the Christian church was an underground church until St. Gregory was delivered from the pit. Nevertheless, this story remains, and it is a tradition that this first Christian king, Opgar, Armenian king, had accepted Christianity, of course. And the church in Scottsdale is named after this king. I believe in all my life, one of my parishioners up in San Jose, his name was Opgar. I really hadn't met too many Opgars, and it's a cool name, isn't it? Opgar. And along with the coolness of the name, it's cool that we have an Armenian church named after this saint. A unique name. You know, this has been a real pet peeve of mine. I mean, for so many years. In fact, I was so I feel blessed. I feel so fortunate that several years ago when I was the pastor up in San Jose, that the bishop of the time was receptive to this request that we made of him, that we named the church after a completely different saint that you don't find in the Armenian churches. His name is Saint Andrew. He happens to be the first disciple of Christ. Believe it or not, this weekend is the feast of Saint Andrew in the Armenian Orthodox Church. We celebrate him, Surp Antrias. We celebrate him, but there are no churches named after him. And so when the bishop accepted this request, I mean, I was elated because, you know, there's so many Saint Sarkis's, Saint Kevorks, Saint Vartans, lovely saints. I can't argue with you, you know? But that's not the extent of it. There are so many saints that go unnoticed because we don't recognize them. For instance, Saint Andrew being the first called, it allows us to think about what does it mean to be a pioneer? What does it mean to be the first one? How difficult it must be to follow Christ when no one else is following. How difficult it must be to be a trailblazer. So Saint Andrew, by virtue of who he was, by the history associated with him, and that history coming to us, allows us to look at that saint as an icon, as a living icon, for that saint to give us the inspiration and give us the knowledge and the fortitude, the strength to really mimic him and say that, yes, I can be the first Christian in my community, in my area. And same way, when you have a Saint Apgar, he gives us certain characteristics. What does it mean to be somebody in power, somebody who is regarded by many people as an intelligent, as somebody powerful, as somebody who is strategically connected with the politics of the world, and then accepting Jesus Christ? And you know, that's what saints should do. They should inspire us. They should give us a message that we can latch onto, that we can mimic, that we can become like. I mean, this is the power of the saints. We do not worship saints. We look at them as the example of people who are able to rise from their humanity and express a bit of the divine. And that's beautiful that we've got a church now that has his name. I didn't have such luck in Glendale. We came down here. Oh, did I fight for this one? They named it St. Peter. I was, you know, they wanted Peter and, oh, that's another story. I begged them at the time. Can we name it maybe the St. Rock, Survem, you know, just to be unique, just to accent a portion of St. Peter's ministry. But anyway, that's neither here nor there, is it? That's life going by. But at least I had a chance to see this beautiful church. And it was beautiful. It was very nice and modest. And if you ever get out to Scottsdale, definitely a place to see and worship, most importantly. Anyway, I digress. I do, Dan. I do digress. And I appreciate you listening in. Anyway, we did not run back to California. But now that we are here, I have taken a break. Today, we are podcasting from La Crescenta. We are in the mobile studio, the Big Apostle mobile studio. Yes, we are in La Crescenta, kind of the upper hills of Glendale. Beautiful, beautiful day today. We've got blue skies out there, no breeze, which is kind of sad. They tell me it's going to rain tomorrow, but you look up at the mountains, you can see them, they're clear, and just a really nice atmosphere to do this podcast. We've got a great show for you today. Ani's here with her bubbles. She's got an interesting one. It's actually a pre-Thanksgiving bubble. That'll get you stirred up and get you ready for Thanksgiving. Along that same line, we're going to be talking about Advent. It's a season that's upon us. We're going to talk about some of the traditions that we've established through In His Shoes Ministries and what you can do to walk in the shoes of others and really make Advent, preparation time for Christmas, a very special time, a time where you grow spiritually and reach out to people in many, many ways, including, of course, course, the most important of ways, reaching out with your heart, reaching out with the Spirit, and sharing that love that God has placed in our hearts. I'm going to be talking about some of the issues that have been taking place. In fact, right after the song of the day, I'll be back and talk about something that really, really annoyed me, and I got to tell you, bothered me. Bothers me in the wrong sense. And, well, I'll just let you wait. We start off every podcast with a song of the day. Today, I stumbled upon an interesting album just a couple days ago. Today, we're going to be listening to Herbie Mann. Now, here's a flutist who, of course, is brought up in the jazz tradition, and he flirted with Middle Eastern music several years ago, and I stumbled upon this album put out in 1966. Unusual because you have so many artists that are recording with Middle Eastern tones and Middle Eastern instruments in the last couple decades for sure. And I'm thinking mostly of people like Robert Plant and like Led Zeppelin, I mean, with Kashmir, I mean, popularizing these rhythms, these tonalities. And, you know, of course, the Beatles were doing that, and again, in pop music, rock and roll, but they were flirting, of course, with Far Eastern tonalities. And the Middle East was brought to forum, in a sense, by Peter Gabriel and the like, were bringing in their not only the tones and the rhythms, but actually the instruments. And you hear the duduk for the first time. You hear the whole. And it's been fascinating for me because, you know, that's what the premise of Armodoxy is, right? Is this fusion of bringing in the old, bringing in the East to Western styles, to Western traditions, and really finding a way of having them coexist and defining ourselves as children of Armodoxy, children of Jesus Christ from the first century, but in the 21st century, adapting to all of the technology, to all of the wonders that are part of our life today. Anyway, I'll get back to this in a few minutes. When I was a kid, I remember there was a musician named, I believe his name was Abdul Malik. And it was a fascinating album cover my dad had because it was a black man sitting with an oud. And that oud was, to us, the Middle Eastern Armenian instrument. And here was a black man playing it. And, well, where was that fusion? And you listen to it, and the name of the album was called Jazz Sahara. He had actually brought in the Middle Eastern tones and the Middle Eastern rhythms and set it to a jazz beat. It was fascinating. I should find that somewhere. Anyway, like I said, I stumbled on this recording just last week. Herbie Mann, an album called Impressions of the Middle East, 1966. Thank you. sort of a weird ending there, isn't it? Like they didn't know how to end it. So, you know, just fade it down. Let's get rid of it. Perhaps it was a long jam session. You know, back in those days, things were on vinyl and they were limited to a certain amount of time. I can't remember what it was. But if I remember right, it was almost like you'd be pushing the limits if you went to 20 minutes per side. So an entire album was limited to right about 40 minutes. So who knows? They might have been jamming over there, and some engineer said, okay, enough. Kind of took down the volume. I know today you could go up to almost about 80 minutes on a CD. Of course, you know, you're missing a side, aren't you? There's only one side to those CDs. They took away a side from us. But anyway, that is Herbie Mann off of an album called Impressions of the Middle East, 1966. I picked that out because, you know, this is what we're trying to do in Armadoxy. Armenian Orthodoxy, along with all the Orthodox churches, conjures up images of the old world, quote-unquote. And you could think of it, Greek Orthodox, Russian Orthodox, Bulgarian, Coptic, Armenian, whatever it may be. It's kind of like an old world over there. And for it to survive in the new world, it has to blend in. And what you just heard right now with Herbie Mann doing, you heard the jazz syncopation over there. You heard the Middle Eastern beats, well, the tonalities, excuse me, and the different instruments that were coming in from the Middle East. And really, it depends on where you are spiritually, emotionally, where you are with your openness, whether that's a collision or it's a melding. You know, it's very possible that somebody will listen to that and say, wow, that is a collision of two different styles. And the same way when we talk about Armadoxy, people will look at what we're trying to do over here and talk about Armenian Orthodoxy in the context of the 21st century. They'll look at it and they'll say, well, that's a collision. That's a collision. You're not melding it. But as you open your heart, as you understand it, you start realizing that those beats and those rhythms all come together in sync. And they start making sense and they start making a concert, a melody. Last night, if you were tuned in to epostle.net, we didn't have our questions in faith. In fact, we ventured off to Loyola Marymount University. Over there, there was a lecture on Mary as the bridge between East and West. Fascinating lecture, and I just heard about some comments this morning. One of the interesting comments was that somebody got up and objected to the icon. Now, if you've ever seen the icon of Saint Mary at the Catholic Cathedral, I should say the Roman Catholic Cathedral in Los Angeles. To me, that is really one of the most beautiful icons I have seen of the Blessed Mother. It just signifies so much. It signifies a universal woman. It signifies somebody in action, somebody who is really taking on the burden of the world. It is fascinating just to see that in the expression. I think they've caught a unique Saint Mary. And apparently, Susie was just telling me that in some of the discussion that ensued afterwards, somebody had mentioned that it was unusual to see, and perhaps even disturbing to see, an icon of Saint Mary without the Jesus child. And yes, for that person, you could say that's a collision of ideas, right? There's a collision happening over there. That is not something we are accustomed to see. And one of the Western fathers that was there, from the Roman Catholic Church, he made a point that you look at some of the Eastern icons, and I'm sure many of you have seen it, if you're familiar with any Eastern iconography, Eastern Christian iconography, you're familiar with the picture or the icon of Saint Mary, the Mother of God, holding Jesus, and the face of Jesus is a middle-aged man, is 30, 40 years old. And he argued that that too is upsetting. And well, to use our words that we're using right now in this discussion, that is really a collision of ideas, a collision of I mean, people would look at that and be shocked. Like, what are you talking about? St. Mary had a baby, not a human being. Well, of course, the icon itself reflects the idea that complete man, the icon itself reflects the perfection of humanity being represented in Jesus Christ. But you come and bring that to the Western world, and you're going to have that collision of ideas. As much as you bring that icon of St. Mary with her hair done in this woman who is ready to take on the world. If you can't see it, you know what? I'll make a note over here, and we'll get Susie, if you can put up a picture of, we'll put a link to that St. Mary picture. You've got to see it. I don't do justice to that artwork. And so somebody from the Eastern tradition looking at that picture will look at it and say, yes, this doesn't go along with what I believe. Well, I'm giving all this as a prelude because something happened just a couple weeks ago to me personally. I was going to share this and, let me tell you. It was a couple weeks ago, I was just sitting at home and got a knock on the door. And it was two young guys. I'm talking about teenagers. Two young guys. And they were very well dressed. Suspicion number one. I mean, Southern California, young guys dressed well. Anyway, they come to my door and they say, excuse us, but we are looking for Armenian families in the area. And we're wondering, are you Armenian? And he just continued without waiting for me to answer. He says, and if not, do you know of other Armenian families on this block? And, well, yeah, the suspicion was what they were wearing. They looked too dressed up to be Southern Californians. But, of course, I live in Pasadena and is a heavily Armenian, a lot of immigrants in the area. So they were rightly looking in the right area for Armenians. Just on our block, there's quite a few families. So I looked over and what was in their hand, of course, they had that little comic book that is the trademark of the Watchtower Publication Society. And I just turned to them and I said, are you guys Jehovah's Witness? And they said, yes, we are. And they said it with such pride. I wish I could capture that moment somehow. I wish I had a film of that moment because their expressions. Here were two young Armenian boys standing on my porch and telling me with incredible pride that they were Jehovah's Witness. And, you know, this is what we were just talking about, right? This is the identity crisis that we have. Basically, not understanding the Eastern tradition, but you're stuck in a Western world in the 21st century. And so Jehovah's Witness theology made sense to these kids, whereas their own tradition, they were isolated from it. And here's the catcher to this, okay? It's like I'm sitting there and I'm looking at these kids and I'm saying that, what can we offer to these kids? What does the Armenian church have to offer? What does any of the Orthodox traditions have? And yeah, I can scholastically give you a bunch of answers. Well, we give you form, we give you the liturgy, we connect you with the past, and blah, 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 blah. But what do these people really want? In that definition of self, in that discovery of identity, they are looking really for comfort. They are looking for the equilibrium. And you know, I tolerate a lot of religions. I feel, you've heard me. I mean, there's nothing I need to say extra. I mean, you know what we talk about here on The Next Step. But when it comes to Jehovah's Witness, I have absolutely no tolerance. And it's basically, I have no tolerance for the intolerant. Because what is Jehovah's Witness doing? They're basically breaking apart families. They do not allow you to participate in family events with non-Jehovah's Witness people in your family. So you tell me, is this God's work? Is this what God wants to do? Is this a real religion? I mean, where religion is supposed to give you those essentials to bring about unity, where is the commandment to love one another when all they're doing is dividing people, and especially dividing them on family lines? So when you talk about Jehovah's Witness with me, there is no tolerance for them. It's not like, you know, these are people coming down the street and talking about Lutherans, talking about Congregationalists, talking about being a member of the Episcopal Church, or even talking about being a member of the Orthodox or Catholic family. They're talking about a divisiveness. They're talking about something that is anti-Christian. Christian means to love one another. And when the religion doesn't talk about loving, but talks about breaking up, about separating, it cannot qualify under the banner of being a Christian faith. Now, I know theologically people will say, well, they don't adhere to the Nicene Creed and they don't believe in the divinity of Christ, therefore they are not Christian. That's fine. But I'm talking on very practical terms. If a religion fails this test of promoting love, if a religion fails to teach people about loving and caring for one another, and here's the extra kicker, loving and caring for your immediate family, what are we talking about? What kind of religion is that? It's not. It's not. And it's definitely not anything that is remotely associated with Jesus Christ. And so I looked at these two kids and we had a couple exchanges of thoughts. And they went their way. They weren't interested in proselytizing me. I made it very clear that they weren't going to get too far. But here's what I'm thinking. What is our answer to these people? You can't say, come and listen to a liturgy. You can't tell the Jehovah's Witness, come and look at the icons, look at the incense that we smoke. No, it's not going to go with the Jehovah's Witness. But what we do have is something that is very fundamental, and we're not talking about it. And that is the melding, that when we talk about armodoxy, it's really how the old works with the new. It's about tapping into the early times of Christianity. When we're talking about Armenian Orthodoxy, you're not talking about something that took place 2,000 years ago. You're going to the early times of Christianity. You know where that is? 13 billion years ago. You're talking about the beginning of time. Listen to the Nicene Creed. It says, we believe in the Father, we believe in the Son, the Holy Spirit, we believe in the Holy Church. At the end of the Nicene Creed, the Armenian Church adds a paragraph. This was added by Saint Gregory the Illuminator. And he says, as for us, we will glorify he who is from the beginning, before time. Iskmek parovores sukvor harach kanes avidianes. We will glorify that which came before eternity. And so we are now connected not to 2,000-year-old Palestine, but we're connected to the beginning of time. When light shined, because God said, let there be light. And when you can push yourself to that point, what do you find at that point? You find the beginning of all eternity. You find, I know, don't get hung up on the words. But you find the beginning. And at the beginning, what is there? There is only love. There is only the presence of God. And in the presence of God, we are all there. Because it's everything. It is the universe. It is the totality of life. It is the totality of all consciousness. At the beginning of time, we are all there. And so if we are all there, we are all here today, we recognize one another as partners, as brothers and sisters, as fathers and mothers to each of us. And so you have the premise for why it is so important that we learn to love one another, care for one another, and learn to agree with one another here on this world, because we are all part of one another. This is a fascinating topic for me because it is really the premise to armodoxy, what we're talking about. When you talk about Armenian Orthodoxy in this sense, you now have an identity with which everyone, young and old, someone in the Middle East, someone in America, someone in the UK, someone in South America, someone in Africa can all relate. Because we are all part of the big family of humankind. I think that's been the strength of Armenian Orthodoxy, the strength of Armidoxy, relating to humans on a one-to-one, each of us, understanding ourselves as creations of God. We're going to take a break right now. We've got Ani. She's got a wonderful, wonderful bubble for us. It is a pre-Thanksgiving bubble. We're going to come back after that, and we're going to be talking a little bit more about what we're going to be doing in this Thanksgiving season, and especially in the period called Advent.
The Thanksgiving Bouquet, today's spiritual bubble. Sandra felt as low as the heels of her Birkenstocks as she pushed against a November gust and the florist shop door. Her life had been easy, like a spring breeze. Then, in the fourth month of her second pregnancy, a minor automobile accident stole her ease. During this Thanksgiving week, she would have delivered a son. She grieved over her loss. And as if that weren't enough, her husband's company threatened a transfer. Then her sister, whose holiday visit she coveted, called saying she couldn't come. And what's worse, Sandra's friend infuriated her by suggesting her grief was a God-given path to maturity that would allow her to empathize with others who suffer. "She has no idea what I'm feeling," thought Sandra with a shudder. Thanksgiving? Thankful for what? She wondered. For a careless truck driver whose truck was hardly scratched when he rear-ended her? For an airbag that saved her life but took that of her child? "Good afternoon, may I help you?" The shop clerk's approach startled her. I need an arrangement," stammered Sandra. "For Thanksgiving? Do you want a beautiful but ordinary bouquet, or would you like to challenge the day with a customer favorite I call the Thanksgiving special?" the shop clerk asked. "I'm convinced that flowers tell stories. Are you looking for something that conveys gratitude this Thanksgiving?" "Not exactly," Sandra blurted out. "In the last 5 months, everything that could go wrong has gone wrong." Sandra regretted her outburst and was surprised when the shop clerk said, "Well, I have the perfect arrangement for you." Then the door's small bell rang and the shop clerk said, "Hi, Barbara, let me get your order." She politely excused herself and walked toward the small workroom, then quickly reappeared, carrying an arrangement of greenery, bows, and long-stemmed thorny roses, except that the ends of the rose stems were nearly snipped. There were no flowers. "Do you want this in a box?" asked the clerk. Sandra watched the customer's response. Was this a joke? Who would want rose stems with no flowers? She waited for laughter, but neither woman laughed. "Yes, please," Barbara laughed with an appreciative smile. "You'd think after all these years of getting the special, I wouldn't be so moved by its significance, but I can feel it right here, all over again," she said as she gently tapped her chest. Stammered Sandra, "that lady just left with no flowers." "Right," said the clerk. "I cut off the flowers. That's the special. I call it the Thanksgiving Thorns Bouquet." "Oh, come on. You can't tell me that someone is willing to pay for that," exclaimed Sandra. "Barbara came into the shop 3 years ago, feeling much like you feel today," explained the clerk. "She thought she had very little to be thankful for. She had lost her father to cancer, the family business was failing, her son was into drugs, and she was facing major surgery. That same year, I had lost my husband," continued the clerk, "and for the first time in my life, I had just spent the holidays alone. I had no children, no husband, no family nearby, and too great a debt to allow any travel." "So what did you do?" Sandra asked. "I learned to be thankful for the thorns," answered the clerk quietly. "I've always thanked God for good things in life, and never to ask him why those good things happen. But when the bad stuff hit, boy, did I ever ask. It took time for me to learn that the dark times are important. I have always enjoyed the flowers of life. The Bible says that God comforts us when we're afflicted, and from his consolation, we learn to comfort others. Sandra sucked in her breath as she thought about the very thing her friend had tried to tell her. I guess the truth is, I don't want comfort. I've lost a baby, and I'm angry with God. Just then, someone walked into the shop. Hey, Phil, shouted the clerk to a balding, rotund man. My wife sent me in to get our usual Thanksgiving arrangement. 12 thorny, long-stemmed roses, sort of. Phil laughed as the clerk handed him his tissue-wrapped arrangement from the refrigerator. Those are for your wife? Asked Sandra incredulously. Do you mind me asking why she wants something that looks like that? No, actually, I'm glad you asked, Phil replied. 4 years ago, my wife and I nearly divorced. After 40 years, we were in a real mess. But with the Lord's grace and guidance, we slogged through problem after problem. He rescued our marriage. Jenny here, the clerk, told me that she kept a vase of rose stems to remind her of what she learned from the thorny times, and that was good enough for me. I took home some of those stems. My wife and I decided to label each one for a specific problem, and I give thanks for what that problem taught us. As Phil paid the clerk, he said to Sandra, I highly recommend the special. I don't know if I can be thankful for the thorns in my life, Sandra said to the clerk. It's all too fresh. Well, he replied carefully, my experience has shown me that thorns make roses more precious. We treasure God's providential care more during trouble than any other time. Remember, it was the crown of thorns that Jesus wore so we might know his love. Don't resent the thorns. Tears rolled down Sandra's cheeks. For the first time since the accident, she loosened her grip on resentment. I'll take those 12 long-stemmed thorns, please, she managed to choke out. I hoped you would, said the clerk gently. I'll have them in a minute. Thank you. What do I owe you? Sandra asked. Nothing. Nothing but a promise to allow God to heal your heart. The first year's arrangements are always on me. The clerk smiled and handed a card to Sandra. I'll attach this card to your arrangement, but maybe you would like to read it first. This is what it said. My God, I have never thanked you for my thorns. I have thanked you 1,000 times for my roses, but never once for my thorns. Teach me the glory of the life I bear. Teach me the value of my thorns. Show me that I have climbed closer to you along the path of pain. Show me that, through my tears, the colors of your rainbow look much more brilliant. Praise him for your roses, and thank him for your thorns. This has been your spiritual bubble. May it float on the wind to heaven.
Thank you, Ani, and that is like a Thanksgiving, a prelude to Thanksgiving. Here in America, we have one of the most beautiful traditions, I think. I really think that when you talk about a secularized society, you can't when you say the word Thanksgiving. Because once you say Thanksgiving, what does that mean? You're thanking somebody. Yes. Who are you thanking over there? Anyway, it is the religious holiday, whether you like to admit it or not. Just by saying Thanksgiving, you've got to admit that, hey, there is something that you're giving thanks to. And that is something that is greater than you, right? Because you're thanking for something that you cannot get yourself, cannot do yourself, something that is in someone else's hands. And when you come down to it, there's a lot of things you can do, but the one thing you can't do is you cannot create or generate life. And that life is something that we all are thankful for. This beautiful thing called life that we share with one another, that gives us an opportunity to come and share thoughts, share expressions, and share supplies. I want to talk to you a little bit about that because, you know, this is the period of Advent. In the Orthodox faith, it is the 50 days that precede the theophany or the revelation of Jesus Christ in this world. And when you think about it, here is an opportunity not only to life, but life eternal. God gives us this opportunity to share with him the eternity, the eternal life. And as a way of thanking him, he asks one thing in return. He asks for us to be able to care for one another. It's interesting, you know, because, there's that little joke that goes around every so often about the man, and usually they pick on three different religions or something, but for the sake of today's talk, it's the man who looks up to God and says, "Everything I have is yours," and he places everything on a blanket, and all of his money, all of his wealth, and he takes that blanket and he hurls it up to the heavens, and he says, "God, whatever you want, take. Whatever you don't want, send back to me." And of course, everything does come back. And in that expression, of course, we laugh because here's a man who thinks that God is going to take. But I think that there's something very profound in this small little story, in this joke. It's looking beyond the joke, right? It's yes, everything does come back to you. And so since you're giving to God, God is giving back to you. And now take it and use it. God gives it to you to use and to share and to care. And so this period of Advent gives us an opportunity to look at God's gift to us and how we can give a gift back to God. You see, Christmas, Theophany, is the day of gift giving. God gave us the ultimate gift, and so we need to give him a gift. After all, it's his birthday, right? If it's his birthday, I mean, it's kind of rude going to someone's birthday party and giving someone else a gift. Is that what we do on Christmas? Well, that's all I could see. We sit around and we say it's Jesus' birth, and in celebration of Jesus' birthday, let's give gifts to one another. Why? Let's give a gift to Jesus. And so the gift that Jesus wants, he says very clearly, love one another, care for one another, serve one another. By this people will know that you are my disciples. Greater love has no man than for him to give his life, the ultimate expression of love for that person. So what can we do in our lives? How can we give to one another? Well, this Advent season is a perfect one. At In His Shoes Ministry, what we do is we challenge people to really walk in the shoes of others. Walk in the shoes of the poor by reaching out to the homeless, by reaching out to the destitute, reaching out to people who have absolutely no way to care for themselves. The hurting. And we do this through definite plans. Now, this is something that we've started off in Glendale, and I'm just thrilled that it's catching on. And I challenge you to really do this in your own communities. You can do this if you're active in a church, to go and talk to your pastor. If you're not active in a church, to really do it on your own. Talk to some friends. And it's a perfect time to do it. One of them, food drive. Every community right now has food drives. There's alarming statistics that are out there that even in the United States of America, yes, in the United States of America, 1 out of 10 people go hungry. Is that acceptable? We have these institutions in the United States. I know you do everywhere. They're called McDonald's. You go in the back and when you look at the trash bins, there's more food that is being dumped in those trash bins than there are on the tables of some of these families. Can we collect? Can we collect food and donate and give to others? That's one thing. Think about shelter. Well, you might not be able to build a house. If you can, build a house for somebody. But how about a simple thing, like giving somebody shelter from the elements? How about a blanket? Can you organize a small blanket drive to get through the winter? And those of you in South America, don't fret. I know you're going through your summer right now, okay? Okay, I know it's hot over there. Think about it for next July, next August when it's cold. You say, well, that's not Christmas then. Yes, it is. The birth of Christ is every day for the Christian. So you can do something anytime. Shelter from the elements. Think about a small little blanket drive. Can you get some people to sew, to knit, to crochet those blankets. And think about what happens at that point. Those blankets now go and not only provide shelter, and they now provide comfort because they are handmade. They're expressions of love. If not, go out and purchase some blankets. Take them out to the homeless shelters. Take them out to the streets. It's a small little thing that you can do. Third, I want to challenge you about toys. We talk about the commercialization of Christmas, about the toys and the Wii's and the Nintendos, and we talk about all kinds of dolls and beautiful things that cost so much money. But remember, for the children who don't get these toys, how much more difficult it is for them to look at others and see them receiving, and the images that are conjured up in their hearts, in their spirits, the envy, the lust for something else. It's not fair. It's not fair because it's all around them, and you can't blame the little child for seeing something flashy and saying, he wants that too. But what we can blame is we can blame ourselves that we're not freely distributing ourselves. You can give all kinds of toys to the people that you love. And I'm not saying to hold it back. I mean, it's a beautiful time, Christmas. I love opening up gifts, and even more than opening up gifts, I love watching children open gifts. But it gets to a point where it gets to be silly too, because usually those toys don't have much meaning to people who have. When you give a child a gift who has nothing, and you see the sparkle in their eyes the first time they see a little doll or see a shiny, let's say a bicycle, the excitement in their heart. Well, one of the things that we do in the In His Shoes ministry, we put up a big Christmas tree and we invite people to bring toys. They have to be new toys. You don't want to give people old toys. Trust me, you don't want to give old toys. New toys. Stick them under the tree. In Los Angeles County, there are 3,500 children who will wake up Christmas morning without toys. These are kids that are in shelters that have been severely abused. Excuse me. They've been severely abused physically, sexually, and severely neglected. And you take these toys to these kids, it's like giving them life. It's like giving them the ultimate that God gave to us. You see, because you and I have been neglected. We've been beaten. Life's taken its toll on us, but God doesn't forget us. He says, I love you. I care about you. In fact, I'm giving you my precious love. I'm giving you the ultimate gift. I'm giving you this identity as a Christian to understand that you have it within you to love others because you are loved, because you are my child, because I want you to share in that life with me forever, for eternity. And so you see, God gave us a gift even though we didn't deserve it. God gave us a gift even though we were down, even though we had no way of paying him back. And these little kids over there are just looking for a chance. In fact, it's even worse than that. They're not even looking. Think about it. It's not their fault that their parents screwed up their lives. It's not their fault that dad beat up mom. It's not their fault that dad took a switch and a whip to them. It's not their fault that their eyes are black and blue. It's not their fault that they've got broken bones. And they're all sitting there waiting for life to go by. Now you imagine if you give them a chance, if you give them a chance to have something sparkly, beautiful. Is that going to solve their problem? Definitely not. But it's a nice little gesture, right? It's like the sunlight that came up this morning. There are people who have so many problems today. That doesn't solve their problem, but it's one more reminder that God is in control. You've got to relinquish to God. You've got to allow God to work his miracles. And for these children, they need to know that they are not alone in this world. They need to know that life is beautiful, because it is. And despite all of the ugliness that they've seen in their lives, that they need to have a glimmer of hope, to be able to look beyond the horizon, to see that the rainbow does come to an end and there is a pot of gold, that pot of gold being the life that they can have. It's a difficult one. I'm not telling you toys will solve the problems of the world, but I'm telling you that during Christmas time, as Christians, we are called to a higher calling, not to give out toys and gifts to one another at office parties, but to give to people who have absolutely no way to give back. That's how we're kicking off this Advent season. I'm inviting you to our website, inissues.org. We'll be updating it next week when Advent does officially begin, but I'll be inviting you there and take a look at all the different projects. Now, I'm inviting you not to just open the website and say, hey, good for you. But take these ideas and bring them into your communities. Talk to people about walking in the shoes of others. It's one thing to love people, but to get there, first you need to respect them. To respect them, you need to feel their pain. You need to put your feet in the shoes of others. In Armenian, we have a beautiful expression. You hear it all the time in Armenia. It's called tsavadanim. Let me take your pain. Let me understand your pain. When you understand the pain of others, when you walk in the shoes of others, then you start opening yourself up to the possibility of sharing, of giving honestly. Giving from the depths of your heart, because you realize that we're all together. We're all in this together. And it's not a question of the best liturgy that you're going to have on Sunday mornings. It's not a question of your iconography, of whether St. Mary is with a child or is with open arms. It's a question of understanding that God's love goes beyond all of the trappings that we have, all of the limitations that our brains impose upon us, but God's love is infinite and we share in it. We're going to be talking about this in the coming weeks. I hope you'll join us on our Questions of Faith series. Next Wednesday evening, we'll continue with Questions of Faith. It'll be on the Epostle Network. You want to check it out because we're going to have a special Thanksgiving celebration and the lighting of Christmas tree. We're going to be starting 1/2 hour early. We're going to be starting at 7 o'clock, epostle.net. You'll want to check the broadcast tab and follow us. We're going to be there and we're going to be sharing all kinds of goodness with you. And we want to get you on our website, inissues.org. Always appreciate any of the feedback that you want to send us. It's a feedback@epostle.net. We read through everything you send. May not have a chance to write you back real quickly, but we try to get back to everybody. So just appreciate all of the letters that do come in and appreciate all of your support. Listen, this is the season of Advent. This is the season of Thanksgiving. I want to just make a small little pitch for us to remember in your Thanksgiving donations. If you're thankful for this podcast, it relies on your donations. Go to our website, epostle.net, press on the donate button, or you can send a check in. We're brought to you by the Armenian Church Youth Ministry Center, 632 West Stalker, Glendale 91202. Oh, yes, that's in California, I should tell you. United States, yes. Hey, listen, we come to the end of this week's podcast. So much more to discuss. We'll be with you again next week. For the crew that puts this together, for Susie, our delightful producer, for Ken, our intelligent engineer, for Ani, our lovely bubbles lady, this is Father Boskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience, not valid with any other author.
We trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week.